those of you who have been to our previous programs, and we've had in this place over the years many interesting programs about the spiritual approach to ecology. We've spoken in this room to the Ontario Organization of Strategic Accountants. We spoke to them about how to measure real human progress. We've had many exciting topics here, but I think this is the first time I've spoken on extraterrestrialism, non-earthly life forms, as described in the yoga texts, particularly Bhagavad Gita and its graduate study, Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, I guess I should give a disclaimer before I begin. From the viewpoint of the yoga texts, the issue of extraterrestrial life is a non-issue. I should say that from the very beginning. But because we, at this present time in the Western world, live in a very peculiar attempt at civilization, which considers that only this speck of dust in the cosmos known as Earth has life, what to speak of intelligent life. That's the mainstream view. And that there's no, and life doesn't exist anywhere else in the universe. There is no doubt that in the coming decades, this viewpoint will be viewed as total folly. How could people be so silly to think like that? But for now, it's the predominant viewpoint. Although many scientists are now saying, it could be. We'll talk more about that later. And certainly we'll briefly go over the topmost luminaries in government and the military who easily admit that the extraterrestrial reality is going on. Even your former Canadian Defense Minister and Deputy Prime Minister is on record for all that. So the subject may not be as exotic or far-fetched as many may make it. All right, since we are approaching this extraterrestrial subject matter from a different angle, we're not approaching it from the Earth standpoint, we are approaching it from off-planet, because the yoga texts are indeed off the Earth planet in terms of their origin. Taking our stance on that, we also want to enrich the atmosphere with sound vibration that is of a non-earthly origin. The Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Mantra, the foundation of holistic yoga practice, does not purport itself to have terrestrial origins. It doesn't even purport itself to have cosmic origins. The yoga texts describe that the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Mantra, is imported from the anti-material world. So we are discussing information, knowledge, that although about the material cosmos, it doesn't originate from within the material cosmos. So why not indulge in some sound vibration that is suitable for the occasion? So just to stimulate our out-of-the-box thinking and to give us a fresh perspective, we're going to have some group chanting of the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, known as Kirtan. And in this way, I think will most suitably prepare for our journey tonight. So we'll turn to Badahari Das, and he'll float us away to non-material destinations. If we turn to the second chapter of the prime yoga text, Bhagavad Gita, we will find that Krishna, speaking to Arjuna, says that the nature of living entities is that they are, well, the Sanskrit term is sarvagata. They are everywhere present. Life is everywhere present. This is the standpoint of Bhagavad Gita. We were speaking earlier about this strange notion that the current attempt at civilization harbors, thinking that life is only on Earth and that human beings are the only intelligent form of life. Of course, as we always like to comment, so intelligent are the human beings on this planet that they are the only species destroying their own environment. So many people wonder, is there intelligent life on Earth? Now, please keep that foundational statement by Krishna in mind, that it is an essential characteristic of life forms, of living organisms, living entities, that they're present everywhere. In other words, from the very beginning in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does not allow you to restrict the presence of living entities to niches that you're familiar with. A lot of current science has been directed towards trying to understand where might there be environments that are like Earth somewhere in the universe, because that's the only kind of environment that life can develop in. One theory is called the rare Earth theory, that Earth just happens to be that rarest of places where the conditions are just right for life. But the yoga texts, particularly the graduate study to Srimad Bhagavatam, the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita, known as Srimad Bhagavatam, point out that living entities can exist in any material situation. They have bodies, appropriate bodies, that allow them to exist in situations that human beings can't exist in, or life forms on Earth that you're familiar with can't exist in. You all know about, I'm sure, extremophiles. These are recently discovered life forms that exist in the most frigid temperatures, as well as the most boiling, far beyond boiling temperatures. In fact, they thrive in these extreme temperatures. So somehow or other, human beings today have this idea that life forms have to fit into what we know about nature, the laws of nature that we know. But the yoga texts never indulge in such fantasy. The foundational understanding is that life exists everywhere, and material bodies are suited towards particular environments, no matter how strange those environments may be to your human perception. And speaking about perception, it's also the reality that we can't see all these life forms because they're beyond the very limited range of our sense perception. You know how dogs can hear sounds that you can't hear and cats can see things you can't see. So you have a particular range of human perception, and all life forms don't have to fit into that range of perception. So the yoga texts open up the universe to you, what to speak of beyond. You see, if we cannot understand the true scope of the material universe, how can we ever understand what is beyond? We get so easily spun out by things that seem out of the ordinary to us. Oh, that can't be true. That's unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that. I've never heard anything like that. We're so conditioned. Even when we hear reputable, authorized information about things that are stupendous, inconceivable, we have a tendency to reject that. I always quote the famous comedian Jimmy Durante, who said, "My mind's made up. Don't try to confuse me with the facts." So we have some facts for you tonight, but I'd like to focus our attention on coping with the reality of extraterrestrialism and letting it change our whole paradigm, even change our whole lifestyle, rather than just dealing with UFOs and aliens, which from the viewpoint of the yoga texts, it's kind of passé. It's like, you know. But because people have some difficulty accepting that there could be non-human intelligence visiting Earth, we'll briefly survey that in its most reputable way, reputable to the ordinary way of thinking. But our main purpose tonight is to deal with the implications that life is everywhere, intelligent life is everywhere. The implications for our lifestyle, the implications for our Western religions, the informations for our the implications for our government, in terms of how we perceive people who are supposedly telling us the truth and protecting us. And all right, some of you may have known that last year, someone who is arguably the world's most famous scientist, Stephen Hawking, amongst lay persons, he's probably very famous. So he stated last year that aliens are out there, but it could be very dangerous for human beings to interact with them. He says that you have to be careful because a visit by aliens to this earth could end up being like Christopher Columbus' visit to the Americas. The Native Americans were put at an extreme disadvantage. So he speculates that most extraterrestrial life will be similar to microbes or small animals. But he also adds that advanced life forms may be out there, and they're like nomads looking to conquer and colonize us. So, he said like that. To defend the aliens from charges of being dangerous, your former defense minister and deputy prime minister came out with a statement that this is not true, that they are such non-human intelligence is very well-meaning, and we should not fear, and they've protected us in the past. They've given us technologies that we've appropriated, like microchips and fiber optics, so we shouldn't develop a paranoia about them. And he's wondering, why is Stephen Hawking speaking like this and stirring everyone up. So you might be thinking, well, here I am trying to work my job or study my way through school or cope with daily life, and what's all this talk about extraterrestrials? Does it really have anything to do with me? My life goes on. But we have to understand that our life is embedded in economic and political arrangements. So just the idea that we may not be hearing the truth in a massive way causes many persons to become very uneasy. Like, why am I being lied to? Why am I being prevented from understanding these things? It's interesting that many persons think that you have to be a crackpot to entertain such views of UFOs, aliens, extraterrestrial life, particularly extraterrestrial intelligence. But Gallup polls point to the opposite, that for the past 20 years or so, Gallup polls reveal consistently that the majority of people accept that there is life on other planets. And the majority of people think that governments are covering up. So it's amazing that on the one hand, we may think, oh, this is kind of an exotic crackpot subject. But on the other hand, polls reveal that most people will accept this. Even in the religious field, which I'll speak more about later, a poll was taken amongst Anglican bishops in the UK. And the vast majority of them accepted the possibility of intelligent life in places other than Earth. And they even went ahead to say that when such truth comes out, there'll probably have to be an extreme overhaul of Christian theology. These are the words of the Anglican bishops, not mine. So we'll talk more about that later. But for now, let's try to understand why we have these blinders against accepting the possibility or reality, depending on your viewpoint, and working with it. You see, the yoga system is working with that reality. Where does the yoga system come from? If we understand the origin of the yoga system, then we'll see why it's so easy for the yoga texts to work with that extraterrestrial reality. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, the speaker, says very clearly that he first spoke this imperishable knowledge of yoga to the chief living entity of the sun planet. Now, everyone has practically heard of Bhagavad Gita. So many persons have delved into it. And in North America, easily 20 million persons are practicing some form of yoga. But very few realize that they're dealing with extraterrestrialism. That the yoga system is not Earth-originated, and it certainly is not Earth-bound. So therefore, you'll read in advanced yoga texts, particularly the bhakti texts like Srimad Bhagavatam, how an adept mystic yogi actually uses yoga to travel to other planets. And if you know the skill, if you know the technology, it's like walking to the corner convenience store. So this is very interesting. Unknowingly, millions upon millions of people are dealing with something that doesn't have an earthly origin. This is what Krishna plainly states in Bhagavad Gita. I spoke this imperishable knowledge of yoga this supreme science of the self and its relationship to the supreme self. I spoke this millions of years ago to the chief living entity who lives in the fire on the sun planet. The yoga texts have the inherent understanding that there are other life forms in the universe that are more intelligent than human beings. And human beings are not considered to be so sharp from the viewpoint of these texts. They are considered to be crucial in when you look at their life as an individual, but as a species, they're not considered to be crucial. Now, why are they considered to be crucial as when looked at as individuals? Because the human life is like a junction. You can go up or down. This process is explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita that according to your consciousness at the time of death, you get your next body. And that next body can be an improvement or it can be a degradation according to your state of consciousness. So the human body is a junction. Many people have the view, or it's a sentiment, that they accept reincarnation. Once you become a human being, you can only go up. But that's not what the texts say. The texts describe that the human form of life is a junction. You can go up or down. You can go to higher material life forms. You can go to lower material life forms. Or you can get out of the realm of material life forms, whether high or low, altogether. So actually, this kind of knowledge is what the yoga system entails. It's packed in. You can't pull it out. Unfortunately, for lack of full understanding and for commercialism, people have indeed extracted the yoga system from its foundation, from its superstructure. But tonight we want to give you that insight that extraterrestrialism and beyond is the very essence of the yoga system, if you take Krishna at his word. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna presents a whole cosmology. He's describing, I'm very difficult to understand by any type of living entity, whether human, less than human, or more than human. Krishna comments that even the greatest scientists on other planets can't understand me. What to speak of persons living in areas of degradation and ignorance? So in that way, Krishna points out the cosmic panorama in which we are embedded in a hierarchy of consciousness. Human beings have their consciousness, but there are living entities known as devas, English equivalent term is demigods, who are far more powerful in their consciousness than human beings, but they're not supremely powerful. So Krishna talks about them in Bhagavad Gita. He explains that some people, they do have knowledge of these devas. And they even venerate and worship these devas, but they've missed the point. They don't understand who is the ultimate. We can easily get a vision of the whole cosmos and beyond, but we are left with no other alternative than to take our information from sources beyond our speculation. We can't speculate our way into understanding the universe. What to speak of beyond the universe? We have to hear from sources that know. We're dependent. And sometimes we feel uncomfortable about that. That we're dependent on superior sources of knowledge. And by depending on those superior sources of knowledge, we can understand. Just look at our helplessness in the face of so much government disinformation, cover-up campaigns about extraterrestrial life. That shows you how helpless we are in our understanding. I mean, how much can we know? How much time do we have for knowing things as they are? We'd like to just turn on the 6 o'clock news and, okay, yes, I accept. I believe. Because we've got to get on with life. We've got our needs. We've got our wants. So, simply to accept what mainstream outlets tell us, it seems the easiest way to go. Pick up a newspaper, oh, yes, indeed. And then we have what is called a knowledge filter. Something unconsciously ingrained in us by our upbringing that causes us to reject anything so-called out of the ordinary. We have to check ourselves out and see how we have that filter there. We have been very successfully educated. And in this way, by our successful education, we can become very loyal producers and consumers. The problem with dealing directly with the presence of extraterrestrials and their superiority even, the problem is that our production consumption endeavors could be interrupted, and no one wants that to happen. It's not wanted that you lose faith in your material leaders, political, economic, and religious. That's not wanted. It's not wanted that you think too much. It's best that we function as cogs in the wheel and that we go on maintaining the system. Knowing too much is not good. We should focus on the essentials of life. What are the essentials of life from that point of view? Work, buy, consume, and die. Let's leave it at that. You start wondering too much about what's going on around you, even materially. We're not even going to deal with spiritually immediately, but just think materially. There's so much going on, really, that no one's telling us. It becomes too disruptive for business. I know Canada's probably different, but as one president of the USA said, the business of America is business. So you don't want to disrupt that. But some people are blowing the whistle. And we'll briefly go over the highlights. When I'm speaking about this subject, I like to present the most credible authorities, because there has been a very prolific disinformation campaign waged by governments, particularly the U.S. government. And so people have a natural suspicion, a natural skepticism, until they start hearing all these top-level persons saying the same thing. But even then, even after I tell you these names and what they say, the knowledge filter, okay, we'll start with your own former Canadian Defense Minister and Deputy Prime Minister, Paul Hillier. He says, it's a fact. It's all being covered up, particularly by the U.S. government. There's no doubt about it. There's a shadow government in the USA that has a black budget and is totally on top of this whole extraterrestrial situation, but they won't reveal it. He says, I was your defense minister. He was under his direction, you know, the armed services in Canada became one. Instead of the Air Force, the Army, and the Navy being separate, he combined it all. He says, I know what I'm talking about. I have contacts. I dealt with other defense ministers. This is all true. Why is the U.S. government hiding it? He accuses the U.S. government of benefiting from extraterrestrial technology, but not telling anyone. So he's spoken right here at the University of Toronto a few years ago. Now you might, okay, we've got to get our knowledge filters in operation. So what are we going to say? This is what the newspapers do. He's 86 years old. You know what that means. Right, right. He's lost the plot. they respectfully describe him as Canada's leading defender of the aliens. But what can you do? How are you going to say someone of that stature has just suddenly gone, you know, gone crazy? Let's present some other authorities, those recognized as heroes in terms of material society. In the USA, to be an astronaut means you're like a god. It means you're a super athlete, you're a super brain, you're just all American. So, one of the Apollo 14 astronauts, Edgar Mitchell, has also said the same thing that your former Canadian defense minister said. Now, you might say, well, maybe, you know, he's just one of these crackpots who got through to become an astronaut. Now, but you know, he's got a PhD in space aeronautics from MIT. He's got 13 honorary university doctorates, and he's got three, you know, national medals, presidential medals of distinction. But suddenly, he snapped. Let's get that knowledge filter going now. Suddenly, he snapped. So he says it's a fact. It's all under black budget. The extraterrestrial visitation, there's no doubt about it. Crashed UFOs, no doubt about it. And he says, due to his high security clearance, he's talked to military leaders in the USA who say, we're just tired of covering this up. It's just not working anymore. But at the same time, they're forbidden to say anything. Okay. Now you might say, well, that's just one astronaut. Okay, he's got a PhD from MIT and all these medals. But there's another astronaut, another superhero, Gordon Cooper, who says the same thing, who says he's seen UFO crafts hovering over secret U.S. Air Force bases with his own eyes. So what are you going to do when the superheroes of society are talking like this? Let's go on. In the 1950s and 1960s, late 1950s, early 1960s, none other than the director of the CIA chastised the Air Force. Say, why are you repressing this information? We know what's going on. Why don't you just admit it? It's the director of the CIA, Vice Admiral R.H. Hillenkoetter. This is not like hidden information. He told the rights of the newspapers. Why is the U.S. Air Force hiding all this information? Everyone knows it's true. Why don't they just come out with it? That's the director of the CIA. Well, he probably, well, let's make an excuse for him. What? He probably doesn't really know what's going on. Now, it's not simply the Canadian defense minister, former Canadian defense minister, also the former chief of defense, the equivalent of defense minister in the UK, Admiral Lord Peter Hillnorton, says the same thing. Says, why is the U.S. just got all this information locked up? Why don't they just come out with it? The French are even more outspoken. Their equivalent of NASA, the American Space Agency, their head, their chief of that, has said UFOs are for real, their technology is beyond our knowledge, and that the French government, four generals, the chief of national police, investigated 6,000 UFO reports, and they said that in 14% of them, there's no better explanation than the extraterrestrial origin. 14% of these 6,000 cases they investigated are inexplicable by any other means. So, what shall you say about them? You have, this panel was composed of the former commander of the French Air Force, and the military advisor to the French Prime Minister. Well, suddenly he went nuts. You have the former head of the French Space Agency, and then four generals, the head of the national head of the French police. And altogether, they concluded that the USA has an impressive, repressive arsenal about the extraterrestrial issue. And that the USA has a very, very successful disinformation policy, which has worked wonders. So, again, what shall we say? Why are all these persons speaking like this? What's important for us is the understanding of the fundamentals, that life exists everywhere. You get a particular type of body, a particular life form according to your karma from your past life. It may be a life form recognizable by earthly human beings, and it may not. So from the yoga text point of view, the important fundamental is the science of changing bodies, and that these bodies that you can get are available throughout the universe in so many different dimensions. And some of these life forms are recognizable by human vision, some not. So there's no controversy about extraterrestrial life. It's considered as one of the symptoms of the beauty of the creation, that there's such variegatedness. To say that life simply exists on the Earth planet, it robs the universe of its full splendor. So the viewpoint of the yoga text is that by understanding the full majesty and beauty of the material cosmos, you can better appreciate the Creator. People, when they see the beauty of nature, many of them feel devotional symptoms. I remember a little boy attending Sunday school, and they taught us a nice song, "Who Made the Mountains, Who Made the Seas, Somebody Bigger Than You or Me." So it's a natural human tendency to have awe and veneration for the cosmic beauty. But just think how that awe and veneration in the face of the cosmic majesty would increase if we actually became aware that life forms exist everywhere in countless varieties. That's why, just to shake you up with the truth, Krishna talks about the yoga system in Bhagavad Gita. Hey, people, I spoke this imperishable yoga knowledge millions of years ago. And by the way, I spoke it to the president of the Sun Planet. What do you think about that? You're busy doing your yoga asanas and pranayama, but guess where all that knowledge comes from? It's non-earthly. So there's so much we can do to expand our horizons, but we need the proper information. The extraterrestrial field is, it's loaded with all kinds of speculation, and that kind of turns some people off. It's very hard work separating fact from creative speculation. The advantage of our hearing from texts like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, is there's no motivation, there's no material motivation of profit, distinction, fame, prestige. And in fact, methodology for verifying the information is presented. Krishna invites you into the bhakti laboratory to take up the bhakti methods of connecting to the ultimate source of life. And in that way, you become experienced. Your perception of reality changes. Otherwise, there's so much going on that's beyond our range of perception. Just look today. The average human being has no idea about what's really happening with the political and economic system they're part of. They have no idea. It's too complicated. It's you just want to know, what was the score of the ice hockey game yesterday? A former prime minister of New Zealand directly told me this. He said he was in a, he regularly participated in group discussions with other national leaders about the future of humanity. And he said, you know, there was a time when we political leaders thought that people could become dissatisfied to the extent that they would rise up and rebel. He said, we don't think that anymore. All you do is give the people 80 channels of television, heaps of sports teams, and they're satisfied. Not just one team in your city, but you gradually got to double it and triple it. The more sports teams, the better. The more TV channels, the better. And people, they don't bother you. And he said, what's wrong with that? They get what they want. So he kept repeating a certain mantra to me while he was describing the situation. He said, if you're smart enough to figure this out, just become one of us. Otherwise, just watch your sports, watch your TV, don't worry about it. But if you want to rise above that ignorance, just become one of us. No problem. You take your choice. He said, I know. You idealists think that this is really, it's acting without integrity. But he said, I used to think like that, but you know, you just got to go with the flow. That's what the way the world is. That's the way the world is. I didn't make it like that, you know. This is the way business is done. This is how society goes on. What can you do? So when I was younger, I was more idealistic, but now I just realize that that's the way it is, and so we might as well get on with it. And then he repeated his second mantra, someone has to be in control. So if you're smart enough to figure it out, become a controller. Otherwise, just watch your TV, watch your sports, and forget about it. Participate in your cosmetic election system and don't worry about anything else. So he talked to me for about 2 hours. So this information is there, but people are too preoccupied to sift through all this. And I can agree with that. It takes a lot of work how to separate the fact from fiction amidst a massive disinformation campaign, which is very successful, very brilliantly organized. So that's what the French generals and national head of police and the head of their NASA, they're accusing the U.S. government. A brilliant disinformation campaign, which makes it very difficult for a person to separate fact from fiction. So my point in bringing that up is to urge us that we need another source of information. So I'm recommending the Krishna texts, those special yoga texts that deal with the last rung of the yoga system ladder. They describe the cosmic panorama in terms of the full purport, that different stations in life are due to different karmas, and these different stations present various material advantages and disadvantages. And human beings are just a tiny group of entities amongst a vast cosmos with all different types of characters. So remember in the beginning, we were describing about Stephen Hawking saying, yes, the aliens are out there. Watch out for them. They could treat us just like, you know, Christopher Columbus and the British and the French treated the Native Americans. They may be out to colonize us and conquer us. Watch out. And then Paul Hillier says, no, they're all nice. They're all friendly. They're trying to help us. They're trying to stop us from destroying ourselves with nuclear weapons. The information given in the Krishna texts is that just like in any neighborhood, you've got your good apples and your bad apples. That's the way the cosmos is. You've got some very pure and saintly characters in the cosmos, and you've got some terrorists in the cosmos. And so you have to learn who's who. But if you just naively assume they're all bad or they're all good, that's not very intelligent at all. Just like in the school you went to or high school, you can remember there were some good students who were cooperative. There were some bad students who didn't cooperate. So the cosmos is like that. Strewn throughout the cosmos are living entities of different motivations. Some are criminal and some are extraordinarily benign. So it all depends on who you run into and what sections of the universe you frequent. That's just the way it works, generally. And you can expect to encounter certain experiences if you're in certain locales of the universe, encountering certain entities. Just like if you go to certain parts of Toronto, you'll expect to encounter certain types of persons there. So similarly, the universe is like that. So to assume that all the extraterrestrials are either real good or they're real bad is ridiculous. They're all variegated. And it depends on whom you're dealing with, whom you're contacting. You get an insight into the panorama of intelligent life forms, especially by reading the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita known as Srimad Bhagavatam. You deal with living entities who have intelligence and powers far beyond what human beings have. And even demoniac entities can also have powers far in excess of human beings. So it's not just that the ones possessing the superpowers, it's not that they're all like angelic. No, even demoniac creatures can have superpowers. So the cosmos actually is a dangerous place if you don't know what you're doing. Just like if you're a tourist and you're walking around Toronto at 2 a.m. in the morning. If you walk in places, you know, that you have no idea what's going on, you don't know what you're doing, you could, you know, be in for some trouble. Similarly, if we just consider the universe in such a naive way, yes, we could run into trouble. So one of the purposes of the Krishna texts, especially of the group of yoga texts, is to inform you about the vastness and variegatedness of the cosmos, and then to point you to the conclusion, whether it's a good part of the cosmos or a bad part of town, you don't want to stick around in the material cosmos. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes the very incisive and dramatic statement. He says, from the highest stations of life in the cosmos, the best material living, down to the lowest places in the cosmos with the worst standards of living, actually all places are unwanted. They're actually all places of suffering, because even in the best places, you still have to die. So Krishna invites you, leave the material cosmos altogether. Don't be enamored by the higher standards of living available in the cosmos. Because even though it is much better than anything you'll experience on Earth, it's still material and it's temporary. So this is the incisive recommendation by Krishna about how to deal with the cosmic variegatedness. He says, he's telling you, don't be bewildered by it all. There are terrorists out there, there are angels out there, but it's still within the material realm. You want to go somewhere else, because everywhere in the material realm, there's repeated birth and death, and that spoils everything, even in the most heavenly places. You can just look at this Earth planet, and you can see that even on this planet, there are heavenly places relatively and hellish places. Just think. You can get on WestJet a few days a week and fly directly from Toronto to where? Hawaii. How many of you have been to Hawaii? Yes. Basically, 28 degrees year-round. And on a 28-degree day, in the every afternoon, breezes blow in from the sea containing droplets of moisture. So, there's an example right on this Earth planet of, in terms of bodily comfort, it's a very heavenly place. On the same Earth planet, you have North Korea. Oh, you don't want to live there. I was explaining a few days ago about some aspects about life in North Korea, in which it is an established fact that some years ago when the famine was, they had a famine that was so intense that people turned to cannibalism. Who could live in such a place? And I was explaining that by government law, everyone has to have a television, and the televisions are factory designed so that they only tune in to prescribed government channels, and the televisions are such that you can't turn them off. And you have to have one in your house. A TV that's constantly broadcasting government propaganda, and you can't turn it off. So there's an example of hell on earth. You have an example of heaven on earth, example of hell on earth. So then why should we consider it so far-fetched that there are heavenly planets and hellish planets? And these are described in advanced bhakti texts like Srimad Bhagavatam. Hellish planets are for persons who did hellish things. Heavenly planets are for persons who did good things, righteous things. But all are stations within the material universe. And so Krishna says, actually, you don't want a bar of any situation. You want to get out. You want to come to me. Krishna points out, you want to go to the non-material realm, the anti-material world of pure love and devotion. So I recommend those of you who want to resolve this extraterrestrial issue, to do it by going to the most comprehensive and profound knowledge of the cosmos and beyond. I promised you that we would briefly discuss the effect of extraterrestrialism once the cat fully comes out of the bag. It's already out, but people's minds are so in a tizzy, they can't focus. We are to congratulate ourselves. We have constructed the kind of society in which we cannot focus. And that's very convenient for those in power, as this former Prime Minister of New Zealand was telling me. He was telling me amazing things like, the goal is to wipe out the middle class. They just get in the way. We want everything like China. Either you're a controller or you're a peon, a worker. Nothing in between. So the middle class, they just screw everything up. They think they know something. They went to the university. They want to tell the government what to do. They just get rid of them. He said there'll be an economic crisis that will take care of them all. And he told me that in the year 2002. It'll just be clear that there are controllers and that there are peons, and that's it. Nothing in between. So we have a problem about focus because we've done it to ourselves. We don't know how to, amidst the information age, we don't know how to select the most important information. We're on overload all the time. The question's been asked, why don't governments just release it? What are they release the information? What are they afraid of? Well, the UK government has released files. The French government has released files. The French government, as we point out, has gone on record and saying 14% of what we have in our files there's no human explanation for. The only hypothesis is the extraterrestrial hypothesis. So the information has been released. The U.S. government's official position, if you write to them or contact them, they'll say UFOs do not exist. The United States Air Force has no position on UFOs because they do not exist. Finished. So why do governments take that point of view? They're afraid that people can't handle it. In terms of the people's consumerism will be disrupted, and that's the last thing anyone wants in the Western world to happen. Don't disturb the consumerism, whatever you do. You don't want to shake people out of their groove because people start wondering, oh, what's the world coming to? What's going to happen? You just want to keep their noses to the grindstone. And then, what about traditional Western religions from the Near East? There's nothing in their metaphysique that describes extraterrestrialism. So, how will these religions cope with the impending extraterrestrial reality? The waters are about to burst over the dam, so how are these religions going to deal with that? Some say it'll mean their end. Others say they'll have to work overtime to modify their theology. That's what the majority of Anglican bishops have said in the UK. They said, if and when this information comes out, then we're going to have to overhaul the entire Christian theology. The Catholic Church already has people working on this. They've admitted. One gentleman's name, Monsignor Balducci, works for the Vatican. He said, we are already preparing how to answer this challenge. And we are going to have a list of questions to ask the aliens. Mm-hmm. And he says, as theologians, as Catholic theologians, we're going to have to figure out, does the mercy of Jesus extend to these aliens? Because they're not earthborn. Did Christ die for them? Because they're from a non-earthly dimension. So does the redemption apply to them? So, you know, the Vatican's working on answers for this. And furthermore, those who ascribe to Judaism, what if some other people in the universe say that we're God's chosen people? It's very easy when you're just dealing with human beings on Earth, and then you can, you know, the fight amongst about who's the chosen people, that can be, you know, it can be a very small and a limited battle. But when you take into account the whole cosmos, and 10 other people say, hey, we're the chosen ones. We're from this planet or that. We are the chosen ones. What are you going to do? So these are theological problems. Now, once you go off planet, once you get out of your restricted Earth paradigm, you open up a can of worms, as many people would see it. Therefore, better to keep the lid on the pot as long as possible, maintain profit and power. There's a positive solution to all this. We recommend that everyone educate themselves with these yoga texts, particularly the bhakti texts. Bhakti means pure love and devotion for the supreme, the love supreme. And you'll find all that information. But all that information is presented, as I said, in a way to motivate you. Let's go beyond all this cosmic stuff and get outside the cosmos. Let us go to Krishna, to the non-material realm, where there is nothing but spiritual consciousness in pure relationship with the Supreme Consciousness. So that's what, after explaining the cosmic panorama very succinctly in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, actually, you should just forget all this and come to me. All right. We'll stop there and ask, might there be any questions? I can go on talking all night, but, you know. Yes. Yes, but not in language that contemporary scholars would recognize. The texts, like in Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata, talk about localized nuclear weapons which could be retracted after they're launched, and that do not wipe out an entire city or continent, but can be directed just against one individual. Yes, that those are described. But when contemporary scholars of Indology read those verses, they just, this is fantasy, or this is a mistranslation, or this is something that we just haven't figured out yet. It's there. The Sanskrit term is brahmastra, a super astra, super weapon. And they're released by mantras. The warriors would release them by mantras, but they could also retract them. And it's not that these localized nuclear weapons, as I said, would just destroy a whole city. No, they would just go, they were, by mantra power, they were directed toward a particular area or to a particular person or persons. Much more humane way of warfare. And those persons were never civilians. They were other warriors. Nowadays, war basically means civilians, particularly the women and children. The system of warfare described in the yoga texts is that in the unfortunate necessity of a battle over justice, it's not that the ordinary persons go off to war. the leaders have to go and fight, and the ordinary person stay home. Now, just imagine if that was the policy these days, you'd probably see much fewer wars. If you're Prime Minister of Canada and President of the USA and you want to get into some war, it means you go. And victory is achieved when the opposing leader is finished, so that the ordinary people have nothing to do with it. But modern scholars consider, this is all yoga mythology. And so yes, the weapons were mantra-powered, sound vibration. I was just discussing with Badahari, our spiritual musician, about there are opera singers. I think one's name was Lily Pons. Anyone heard of her? She could hit a high C note and shatter a glass. That's the power of sound vibration. So, similarly, material sound has possibilities beyond what we can imagine, and what to speak of spiritual sound. So the bhakti texts describe that the spiritual sound of the Hare Krishna mantra shreds the layers of material illusion that are encasing us and produces genuinely liberated beings. You're not only liberated from all the materialistic propaganda that's saturating the atmosphere these days, but you're also liberated from your false ego, your false conception of life, that we are the body and mind, and we're meant to please the body and mind. We are matter, and so we're meant to indulge in material activities for our satisfaction. The sound vibration of the Maha Mantra, the Hare Krishna Mantra, literally shreds all that ignorance, all that illusion, and reconnects us with the Supreme Source. Very nice question. Any others? Yes. Yeah, when I was about 4 years old, I was thinking, what kind of planet have I landed on? Yeah, I was thinking like that. Really? Then I became more conditioned, But I remember thinking like that when I was 4 years old. My God, where have I come? Yes, I've been on every habitable continent of the world for over 30 years. That means I've been everywhere except Antarctica. And I've seen many things, but it's not, it's not a major thing for me, because I understand this material cosmos is full of that kind of stuff. So I acknowledge it, but my vision is a bit beyond that. It's like you're on your way to visit a friend or on your way to work and you're riding in the, you call them trams here or subways? Streetcars? Okay. So you're in the streetcar, and you may look out the window and see something interesting, but your main intent is to go to your destination. So it's not that you're unaware of what you see when you look out the window of the streetcar, but it just like where I'm staying, I can look out the window and see all the workers on the old maple leaf garden, and they're doing things on the roof, and they're have the scaffolding up. So I see it, but I can understand what they're doing, but it's not the foremost thing in my mind. Yes. But, it's like a prison. You release the prisoners and new ones come and take the place. Everyone, all living entities have their independence. That's why the human form life is so important. It gives you that full consciousness to make an independent choice what you're going to do with your life. Animals, they don't have that developed consciousness. Therefore, as we were explaining a few nights ago, animals don't have karma. They don't have the developed consciousness to choose. But human beings do, and so therefore human beings get karmic reactions. And because some living entities will misuse their independence, therefore the vast panorama of life forms in the material cosmos is waiting for them. Bodies, the body shop. But people think having a body is a great privilege. These bodies are for our enjoyment. But actually, the yoga texts describe that the bodies are like a prison uniform. Oh, we don't want to hear that. Okay, I'll stop there. Next. Yes. Oh, you're taking a picture. I thought you had your hand raised. Yes. What's the purpose of? Well, what's our purpose? What's our purpose? What are we trying to do? Most of the human beings you know are trying to do that. Materially speaking, we are trying to control and enjoy. So, that's the story of life everywhere in the material cosmos, except for higher entity beings, whether they're on Earth or beyond Earth. They have a higher purpose. They're trying to reconnect to the ultimate source. They're trying to reconnect to Krishna. Krishna describes this in Bhagavad Gita. So, there are so many creatures in this universe that have powers far beyond what human beings have. We are dazzled by things like mental telepathy and the way UFOs just defy the known laws of science. But on other planets, those things are considered child's play. Actually, the UFO technology is very primitive compared to the mantra technology described in the yoga texts. How through sounds, through mantras, you can control the weather. You can construct buildings just through sound. If you can, with sound, shatter a glass, then why? What's so difficult to accept that with the right sound, you can construct something? So all this is described in the yoga texts. But the main power that Krishna emphasizes is the power of pure love and devotion, which conquers matter and its constraints. All right? Yes. Situation of?
Will it progress our higher understanding?
If we
become connected or become aware to
it? No. This universe is vast, and just because you know that there's life on other planets, it doesn't necessarily lead to your increased spirituality. It's just like, it's the 1700s, you're living in Europe. Knowing that there are people living in what is now Canada, does that automatically make me more spiritual? But what does help is if you, as I'm presenting, can think, well, there's a vast body of literature that describes all this and beyond. So maybe I should take that superior information in toto, not just about the cosmic extravaganza, but what's beyond the cosmic extravaganza. Then you're into something. And that's what I'm emphasizing tonight. Yes?
What's the word on possession and exorcism in the various different concepts?
Yes. there's nothing superstitious about ghosts. The yoga texts describe, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there are persons who worship ghosts and spirits to get power. He just dismisses it in one line. There are persons who worship ghosts, nature spirits. There are even persons who worship the devas, which are the highest entity consciousness within the material world. And Krishna dismisses that too. Why do people play around with these things? Ghosts, spirits, devas, or demigods. They're all trapped within the material cosmos, no matter how powerful they are. So what are ghosts? They are living entities who were so degraded in their previous life that they don't even merit a material gross body. You see, in order to carry out your desires, in order to enjoy gross matter, you need a gross body, flesh and blood with the senses. But there's some living entities who were so degraded in their activities and polluted their consciousness so much so that nature will not give them a gross physical body. But they have all the desires, but they don't have the physical body to act on those desires. It's very, very painful. And because they are in such pain, they want to make you miserable. And so they bother you because they're envious. You got a physical body. You can try to enjoy. We can't do that. And sometimes if the person is very weak-minded, especially those who indulge in intoxication, their mind becomes weak and the ghosts try to take over your body because then that way they can enjoy through your body. So that's what they call possession. But you get a much deeper understanding of that in the yoga texts. So Krishna says, those who play with the ghosts and spirits, they'll go with the ghosts and spirits. If you want to play that game, you can have it. You'll be on that level. Those who want to connect with the devas, the demigods, they can do that. And those who want to connect with me, they come to me. So that's the ultimate goal of the yoga system, the supreme ultimate reality. As Krishna says, they come to me. So that knowledge of what is that me is the most secret of all yoga knowledge. It's called Raja Vidya, the king of all knowledge. All right. It's been a very interesting session indeed.